This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Don't miss your window of opportunity. Upgrade your space now during Blinds.com's anniversary sale and save up to 50% site-wide. Blinds.com. Elevate your windows with the number one online retailer of custom window treatments. Blinds.com offers hundreds of premium window treatment options. Choose from woven wood and Roman shades to blinds, motorized shades, and more. All designed to fit your budget without sacrificing quality. Blinds.com brings the showroom to you with free virtual consultations and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Our design experts can help schedule a professional measure and installation, plus guidance for DIYers too. Blinds.com has been trusted for 29 years, earning thousands of five-star reviews. Shop with confidence, knowing you'll get upfront pricing, no hidden fees, and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. But hurry, these savings won't last. Shop Blinds.com's anniversary sale happening right now for up to 50% off site-wide. Save up to 50% site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Dottie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on this morning. I'm really looking forward to our questions, and I'm also really looking forward to Comic-Con.
Oh, listen. By the way, did you ever think Comic-Con would come into play after all that you went with as an astronaut? Like, they started doing it a few years ago, and I was like, what a great idea. But I hadn't even thought of that.
No, I was surprised when I got the call this year, and I was really glad it worked out with my schedule. And then I saw the lineup, and it made me really excited, too, because several of these folks were actually from shows when I was growing up. And then, like, new shows that my daughter watched growing up. Like, I even saw that the woman's the voice for Dora the Explorer is going to be there, too.
So good. Hey, listen, let me drop a name, because I can very seldom ever do this. I was lucky enough that I went to dinner with Captain Kirk.
Oh, yeah. William Shatner.
Yes. Yes. So it's a longer story, but we're friends with Henry Winkler. Henry and he are dear friends. And I got asked to go. And he's like, if you'd like to go, Mr. Bill Shatner will be there. So it was pretty amazing. Just even though he's a television astronaut, what an incredible human being. And his ride on Blue Origin, the tears, the way that affected him, I thought it was absolutely beautiful.
I did, too. And, you know, when I was inducted into the Space Camp Hall of Fame, he is the keynote that inducted my inauguration class into the Space Camp Hall of Fame. So it's kind of a neat, that was a really special moment for all of us, too.
By the way, I think all of you should get into the Hall of Fame.
All astronauts?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe with time. I'm still pretty, you know, no, there's like many, like this year for the Astronaut Hall of Fame, it's going to be Bernard Harris and Peggy Whitson, and both of them are very, very deserving.
Well, the idea that your mom was a math teacher, dad's a shop teacher. So you grew up, education was important, learning was important. There was a lot around the house, right? So you got interested in the Hubble telescope, books that your parents had brought home. And were you an exceptional student or just a good student?
I stood out in my classes growing up. I wasn't the only smart person, but I was like top of my class by the time I was graduating in high school with 15 other people too.
Well, and but for God's sake, both your parents are teachers. You're not getting away with anything. Your assignments are getting
turned
right.
Home, right?
Like, yeah. There's no escape.
My sister and I always joke. My sister is a math teacher in Chicago, and I became the science teacher. And so, yeah, we were like, there was no escaping STEM, right? Like, right. We were going to be teachers too, probably.
So teacher salaries can't afford space camp. That's a pretty expensive camp. I remember as a kid that people talking about it, and it definitely wasn't going to be on my options. And you had to write an essay. You can get an all expense paid trip to space camp, and you had to write an essay, and you did.
Yeah, and I took second place, and I got a really cool T-shirt from NASA, but I didn't get the all expense paid trip.
Oh, sorry, Daddy. Just like that, I just like you're so kind and so like you're very upbeat. You're like, it's a really great shirt. I'm like, it's not a trip to space camp. Goddammit.
That's right.
But your parents, that they hated to see that disappointment.
Yeah, and I think that they also saw the dedication, right? Like, I think if I hadn't have taken the time to write the essay and, like, really work at it, yeah, they probably would have said, you know, we'll do other camps that are close by that are maybe more affordable. We don't have to send you on an airplane, something like that.
Right.
But I think once they saw that dedication and being educators, I think that's when they were like, okay, you're serious about this. But they still made me wait till spring break. They wouldn't let me get out of school for it.
Of course. Now, so you get through that, and then it really kicks into high gear. Now, this is a point in any young person's life. You know, you meet social needs come in, right? Like you discover the opposite sex. You want to be part of the social world. And you can really easily kind of come off track because that's the track you were on. You can't waver. You have to stay on it. You have got to stay so laser beam focused because so few people get the chance.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the cool part about some of these science endeavors too is that there's like at my high school there was science Olympiad and there were boys and girls in the club, so I'm not gonna lie, I mean, yes, we like socialized a bit, and
right.
I didn't date any of them, but like we were all very good friends. And the same, like I was on cross country and track, and you know, again, still like had some time to have fun and not just only think about academics or athletics.
I got to tell you, you're a different human being. When your idea of fun away from academics is just a long, extended run.
That part is probably true. I think there's quite a few people that think that's a little odd about me.
So then you decide, listen, I'm really going to go for this. You get into geology, and you start to put the whole idea together.
Yeah, I went to Whitman College in Walla Walla, Washington, which, you know, Walla Walla comes up in comics, too, with Bugs Bunny.
Here's my only, my Walla Walla experience. We were on a motorcycle trip going through Washington, beautiful state, like amazing. But I remember coming around and thinking, wow, that's what they were talking about in the song, Amber Waves of Grain, because there's all the farm hills out there. And we come around, and we ended up spending the night at a crappy hotel on a motorcycle trip across from the Walla Walla, Washington prison. And that's my entire Walla Walla, Washington experience right there.
Well, my dad did joke about that as we pulled into town to drop me off at college. He's like, you'll be successful if you don't end up there.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dad.
So you tell your parents at this point, I think I'm going to try to get I'm going to get on at NASA. I'm going to try to get in the program.
Yeah. I mean, my parents knew, in fact, because I even looked at attending the Air Force Academy and had thought about that seriously, too. So my parents knew that I was really driven. I really wanted to be a part of NASA. And they've always been supportive. You know, especially my dad. Like, it's not that my mom isn't, but I think it scared her a little bit. But for my dad, again, like you mentioned, like the Apollo astronauts, like he just saw this as the like most amazing thing that you could ever do.
It is.
So he too, like really shared this like big passion of space. So that's really nice to have people in your corner, right? Like, and the most important people, I think, as parents.
I mean, let's talk about something real heavy though. You know, at this same time you're going through school and this has already happened. The Challenger had already exploded.
Right. I was in the fifth grade when Challenger happened.
Yeah.
That's
crazy. And your parents were teachers, because we all remember everybody had a TV in the room.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty similar experience, I think, for all of us. We saw it, and then you realized what happened, but nobody knew how to deal with it because it was just deemed impossible. And the TV just shut off, and class started again. And it was just, I remember being like, well, what happened? Like, what? And then, of course, later on, my parents explained it to me. But your mom and dad, being teachers, being so close to that, like, they had to be like, oh, hell no, you're not doing that.
No, even then, I went home that night, 'cause like you said, you talked to your parents to kind of understand what happened. And my grandmother had died the year before from cancer, and that had been a long process. Like, it had been about 2 years that we had watched my grandmother die.
I'm sorry.
And so my mom, like, talked to me about, like, you know, they were pursuing something that is worth pursuing, and we don't know how long we have on Earth, but you can't live life wondering about that. And I think that that conversation really helped me in processing. I mean, it's so tragic, and yet also right. realizing, like, we got to live every day.
That's right.
As if, you know, it is our last, and, like, let's make it the best that we can.
So then you end up applying, and how many people, what's the attrition rate? Like, how many people apply to be in the program, and how many people are accepted at NASA?
Well, and like you mentioned, I came at it a little bit different route. So I think for the people applying to be teachers, I think there was around a 2,000 that had initially applied. And then they brought 35 teachers down in the year that we were doing the interview. So 100 people were brought down for interviews, but coming from like pilots, engineers, doctors, scientists, there were thousands in that group also that had applied. So to get narrowed down into the 35 teachers of the 100 total people interviewing, like after that, I felt like I was winning, right? Like that whole week was amazing. Also, a little uncomfortable at times because let's face it, we have a lot of medical tests that we go through,
right.
Some which are not as comfortable as others. And, but that week was just incredible. And I went back to my classroom and I was so excited to share about it with my students about just like the excitement of space, but also how that really personal process had gone. And especially my students were in a economically disadvantaged area. And so I wanted them to know,
absolutely.
Like, yeah. Go for your big dreams, right? Like, I wanted, like, if I could go for mine, you've got to go for yours.
What grade are you teaching at that point?
I'm mostly ninth grade, but yeah. Some juniors and seniors in my astronomy
but,
class.
But it's a really big time developmentally. Like, you're kind of starting to get a feel for this world and understand it. You know, what your challenges might be, what is available, what isn't available. And, yeah, that's a huge moment. So they train you, you go through it, you pass all of the requisite check marks, and then you're strapped in to the moments coming up. Like, it's going to happen now. Like, terrifying, exciting, worried, not worried, or just 100% let's light this candle?
I mean, I think all of those things, actually. Like, so, like, the morning of, we go out really early to the vehicle. It was like 2:30 in the morning. I'm the last person to be strapped in because I was mission specialist too on the flight deck. And at that point, I felt just like very, I remember like looking back to where my parents, my husband, my daughter, my friends, my former teachers, like looking back to across the river and just feeling really honored to be selected. Then I really wanted to go, but also I have watched many missions before this and been on support for those teams. And I know we can get scrubbed. There's so many things that can happen, right? So part of you is like, yeah, let's go. And part of you is like, just remember, it might not be today. And then you're on your back. You're on your back for about 2.5 hours.
Right.
And some people say that they can like take a nap. Heck no, I couldn't take a nap, but I did relax. I did relax. I thought through. And I, you know, just like deep breathing, I was like really thinking through like how I wanted to be successful. I think every astronaut since Alan Shepard has had in their head, like, I don't want to blank this up.
And right, right, right.
So that's actually, I tell a lot of kids, like, that might be my biggest fear, because at this point you've trained so much that the other things are kind of set aside. Your training has been so good. But then there's that anticipation, like, I really want to go. Like, this is my big dream. Let's do it.
Yeah. And then you hear him say, go for lunch.
I was so excited, right? Like, we were so thrilled to get that go.
Oof. Oof.
Yeah.
And then the rumble, like, everything starts.
And you cannot imagine,
no.
Like, there's nothing that can prepare you for the energy that you experience in the initial liftoff. This is nothing. Like, I guess I had a colleague who did compare it to being rear-ended. Thankfully, I've never been rear-ended in a car.
Right.
But that transfer of energy. And then, you know, and again, I'm mission specialist too. And so I've got a lot of things I'm monitoring. And so I'm just really thankful for all the training, because those first initial milliseconds, your brain is like, what the heck?
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're trying to escape in this giant. I mean, what is the entire everything weigh when it leaves the ground? Everything that has to, the rockets, the shuttle, everything.
Oh my gosh, you're going to make me go look something up on the internet again, because I honestly have forgotten the mass of everything.
Let's just say, like, the round. But the point being, I wanted to make was that has to break out of the Earth's atmosphere, out of our gravity. That's how much push is behind this. All of that, like, you're taking a building and it's going, right?
Yes.
And it is just, everything has to be perfect. Everything has got to go. And it's still, this is not exact science. This is still dangerous, incredibly dangerous. And, you know, you make it past Max Q, name of your band also, and you get past that pressure. At what point do you realize, oh, we're past the Kármán line? Do you know, can you feel it?
No. And at that point, like, I didn't really think a lot about the definition of space lines, right? Like, we, it's not a checkpoint on our checklist. I can see, though, why now, you know, right. It would be something. What we do call out at this point are all of the abort, right? Like, we're looking at our speed and our abort possibilities, and just making sure our engines are all three going at 104%. And so, you know, these are the parts of the training that we've also done in the simulators over and over and over. And of course, in the simulators, you oftentimes are like, oh, well, we're going to be taking that abort. But thankfully, you know, that is not the case in this mission. So really, I felt good when we got to MECO, main engine cutoff.
Yeah.
And you float up in your seatbelt. What really blew my mind away is here 8.5 minutes earlier, we were sitting or lying on the launch pad, and we're looking at the UK. Like,
yeah,
that's it. I just couldn't even fathom that, right? Like, I love flying in airplanes, and we fly in the T-38 jet as astronauts on a regular basis, but to be over the UK in 8.5 minutes was nuts.
And, you know, that's the other thing I wondered, if everybody had a window seat, like when you're leaving, you could view.
No, the mid-deck doesn't have a window seat, but what we do is we put a camera and then a little screen so that they can watch.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah, so, but then they, like, my friend Stephanie was right by the hatch, and she has to float up and help take pictures along with Rick, who was sitting right next to me as Mission Specialist 1. They're photographing that external tank to make sure, you know, we didn't have the foam loss. And just like they're documenting all that. So there's a lot that goes on. It's really not until later in the evening that I processed, you know, I am in space. Like, I mean, I knew I was in space when we got to MECO, but we still have to do another burn to circularize our orbit. So it was later that evening when I could really look out the window and just like really, you know, like really recognize, like, I'm in space. It really did come true. Like, this, all of this dream and the work, and it's all happened, and I'm here.
You had to be like a kid in a car seat waiting for your turn to take the buckles off and get out. You're like, I just got to get out of this. I just got to go. I got to go look around.
Yeah, and float around and flip around too.
What did I see the other day? And I don't know why I never considered this, but I saw a great video. I didn't realize you can basically strand yourself in while you're floating. If you stop motion, you can't start motion again because there's no gravity. So I'm watching a video of an astronaut try to get some traction, and, you know, by waving his arms and kicking his legs, you're just like, dude, you're stuck there until somebody kind of comes over and helps you out.
Yeah, I think Garrett Reisman made a cool video. I don't know if that's the one you saw, but he did that when they were first adding modules, because none of the racks were in place. And so, yes, like literally from side to side and end to end, you can't get to a foot or handhold, so you would be stuck in the center.
You're just floating. You're like, I can't go anywhere. Yeah. It's just amazing. And 15 days up on the International Space Station. And then you are, even again, now let's get to the next part. You got a dock, right? Terrifying. Like, I know you were trained and I know you're confident, but still, that's, you know, there's key dangerous moments, right?
That's definitely a dynamic moment. I mean, I totally trusted our commander and pilot and the rendezvous team. But what I will say, like, one of my jobs during docking was at the very end, Naoko and I used our docking system to drive the hooks that pull the station and shuttle essentially together, right, and seal up. And I looked out the window at the space station and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't look. Because in the simulator, it's pixels. But looking out the window was just this giant, beautiful, but very reflective space station. And it is massive. And you're like, oh my gosh. Like, let's just pretend we're in the simulator and do like what we did in the simulator.
By the way, I think I just learned that we don't use the word dangerous. It's a dynamic situation.
Yes, dynamic.
I was going to remember that. So you dock, and then you realize you're part of something even bigger, man. It's a multicultural, multinational space station, the International Space Station. This is supposed to be beyond politics, and I love the idea that we're just still pushing outward, still trying to find out what's going on, and because we are. This is how we're going to survive. We're either going to learn and find a way, and we're going to go out and move, or this, I God knows when, but I feel like that's the end of civilization if we don't find a way.
Well, I love the space station, yes, for it being like truly international and collaborative, and just we keep adding the number of countries that have participated. And even if people haven't flown astronauts, the number of countries that have flown payloads that return science back to them. So it's truly an amazing place, and it is really improving life back here on Earth.
Absolutely.
In so many different ways.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, obviously you're a scientist, you are an astronaut, you're a teacher, you know what the world is and how fragile we are. But the thing I always come back to is everybody's moment where they see just that ultra flat, fragile blue marble and the vapor of the atmosphere, that thin nothing that protects us, that keeps us from the vacuum of space, how fragile we really are. It's suddenly cemented.
Yes, it really is. It's that overview effect. And it's also the, like, when you turn and you look into the depths of deep, dark space, right? It's also very humbling, right, to think, oh, we're just going around an average star, and there are infinite number of these average stars, right, like as we've learned from Hubble and from James Webb now, too. And so that can be really humbling. But then when you look back at Earth, you're like, but that's my place. That's what makes me significant, and the people I love and the planet I care about. And it's beautiful. Like, as a geologist, I was so excited to see all these places I've never been on Earth, but that I think about because of plate boundaries or because of volcanoes or, you know, that, yeah, all these things. So it was just so beautiful to look back at Earth.
Is it somewhat terrifying? Because I know that you dive, right? Because you've also done underwater exploration.
Yeah, I got to live for almost 2 weeks underwater at the Aquarius Habitat off of Florida. And I found that super peaceful. Yeah. Like, both places I actually find really peaceful. I don't really think about, I mean, I'm aware of the dangers, and we have trained. And especially, like, when you're underwater, you know, like, well, I can't breathe water.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, we used to play this game, this weird game. Like, I dive, so I have a friend who's a marine biologist, and we would leave. We'd go down to about 70 feet and then go out as far as we would feel comfortable, because it gets real uncomfortable out into the deep. We just call it the deep blue. There's nothing to see, and after a while, there's nothing you can visualize anymore, and your eyes kind of go weird, and there's nothing to look at, and you just kept going and going, and then before you would just go, okay, I got to turn back around and go back to the reef. Like, that absolutely, like, there's nothing. And I just wondered if that's even a percentage of what it's like to be in space when you look away from our Earth, when you look out into that, you go, man, there's nothing for a very long time. Yeah.
Yeah. Into the depth. And if you only focused on that, yeah, you would be lost, right? Like, if you didn't think that what's behind you is Earth, then it would lose you. And despite how beautiful it is, you got to look back at home. And I think that's the same, like you said, look back to the reef. kind of anchor yourself, right? Yeah. Literally, like what anchors us?
What a gift! I mean, to be a true explorer. I mean, how many astronauts are there? I mean, how many since the beginning?
I believe we are now over 600 with commercial astronauts as well.
Right.
I do know we just hit over 100 this fall for women in space, and I believe we're over 600 total astronauts in space. Pretty amazing.
Over 8 billion human beings on the planet. 8 billion, 600.
Yes, it's an amazing, and more recently, right, like that number has just grown. That's why I'm not very good at remembering it, because it's very dynamic, a different dynamic. It's always changing, and I think that's the exciting part, too, is it's becoming more available to others who are experiencing this overview effect and also making it a part of their mission to, in different ways, right, to talk about what it meant to them and to make the changes that we need back on Earth.
Well, back to Shatner and when he saw it, he portrayed space so well. He became such an icon of space. But everybody else is kind of gallivanting on that moment, and they're flipping around space. And I understand that he was completely. Like, it changed him. You could see it when he started to talk. And again, after meeting Shatner a couple of times, he's a bit of a curmudgeon. And I love him. But he's a grumpy old guy. Like, he just doesn't suffer fools at all. So to see him get emotional like that, I mean, that wasn't acting. That was him. Like, it really hammered him, man. And I think we got to get more people to do that. We've got to find a way to bring that home without putting them on that flight. Obviously, it's just not possible, right? Like, I'd sell my house. I'd sell everything I own for one chance to orbit. One.
Well, you can do it soon, then.
You know what?
Yeah, but it really does. And I thought that was very profound. And I think also as we, you know, I mean, he's in his 90s, although he didn't look it, but... just thinking about that, too, is like where we are in our life. I think it also holds extra meaning at different points, too.
I'll be honest. I was hoping this wouldn't be some kind of aortic dissection, which I was like, because I'm like, dude, you're 90 years old. Because that is a real thing, right? Like, you pull real G's leaving this earth. Like, when you're taking
that's
off,
right.
The pressure is incredible.
And, yeah, that's right. So the good thing is, like, he's kept himself healthy.
Yeah.
And that, yeah. Yes.
But, I mean, they go through all that with you, right? Like, they're like, hey, man, a lot happens to your body when you experience this kind of force.
Yeah. And, well, and for riding on the shuttle, we pulled 3.5 G's through our chest. I have to admit, I don't know the full profile of G's that they're pulling, like, for Blue Origin. But they are pulling G's, and it... And you do. You have to be healthy. You have to kind of, like, be ready to experience that. It's not, like, the most horrible, and it doesn't last for a long period of time. But you just need to be aware, and they would have flight doctors talking to them about that process.
So whether or not it's true, the AI overview says just under 3 G's during power descent, and on the way back in, 5.5 G's during the descent back into the atmosphere.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I wasn't sure. It's very helpful. I am glad that AI is there. It's good. It helps me out, too, when I'm like, wait, I want to know. That's that curiosity part, right? Like,
yes.
I need to know this.
I do it all day. I literally, this is what I do all day, Dottie. And if you're just joining the show, Dottie Metcalf Lindenberger, retired NASA astronaut, mission specialist. And she's going to be at Comic-Con. You can meet her. March 21st to the 23rd at KC Convention Center. And I'm not kidding. Like, I could do this all day with you, Dottie. I'm fascinated by the story, how you get there, what it's like, the experience. You know, like everybody else, I've got the same crazy questions. Like, you know, how do you go to the bathroom in space? How do you shower? What happens with this? What about these poor guys that have been up there for, God, how long have the two been there now? How many?
Sunny and Butch. Yeah. I just want, they have been in space. I don't know the exact day count, but they're doing amazing.
Yes.
Like, Sunny just, set a record during her spacewalk. So they're doing great. You know, they really could come home at any point. They have a vehicle there, but the planning is to keep them there longer just because of the way it works out for launches off of Florida. But if there were an emergency, they could come home today. So they're good. They're good.
So what happens? Tell me this. When you come back after 15 days, and then, of course, the danger of coming back in, that's everybody's like, you know, you talk about the, you know, when you watch.
Oh,
by the way, I still love all the old right stuff, just like you, that movie, everything.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks,
yeah.
The Apollo. even down to Space Cowboys. I don't care how unrealistic it might be sometimes.
It's fun.
Yeah.
I liked Armageddon. The asteroid in Armageddon is Dottie.
Yeah, right? That's right. But you come in, they talk about, you know, bouncing off the atmosphere if your angle is wrong, or the amount of heat generated from the friction. And I mean, that's terrifying in its own way. It's a dynamic moment. And
it's definitely a dynamic 40-minute moment.
Yeah. So is it that violent the way it seems in the movies when it's coming in?
No, it's not violent. But again, there's some things that, like, the simulator couldn't quite do it justice, right? So it did a great job. It prepared us for a lot of things, but couldn't quite do it the justice. We also had this really cool, because we were the fourth to last flight and the second to last flight of Discovery, and we knew that we could be coming home in early morning, we asked for a descending. So we came across like Canada and the United States and then came into Florida versus an ascending node, which would bring you up South America and cross at Central America. And that coming across like the Canadian Rockies so fast, like there was this moment. I remember when Jim, our pilot, looked out the window and he said something like, "Those are really close." And I couldn't immediately see, but a part of my brain was like, oh my gosh, did we mess up?
Yeah,
right? Like, does he mean they're too close? But then I looked out and I realized what he meant. Like, all these last 15 days, we have been separated from Earth. And now suddenly we're in the atmosphere and it's more like an airplane. So then I understood once I got the visual.
Right.
But a little gut part of me, you know, as mission specialist too, I was like, oh, crud, did we mess up?
Yeah.
Did we burn wrong? You know?
Well, that was
but
the
yeah,
old
no, okay. it's amazing. And just even pulling the two Gs that we pull on the heading alignment as we come in to land in Florida, that after your body has not had Gs on it.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that. Right. You've been floating.
It
yeah.
seems so, like, my head felt so heavy. Like, I felt like, whoa, I'm really working to hold my head up with my helmet on.
Right.
Which before in a simulator, you're like, it's no big deal. Right. We do it all the time.
And what was the old joke that it's a flying brick, right? It's not the most agile ship in the world to land.
Right. It's essentially falling, really. It's controlled falling to, reduce this energy because it is a glider. And so it's a falling brick to a certain point. Then it becomes aerodynamic. But it's still like this is that controlling of energy. It's super interesting. I mean, it is an amazing vehicle.
You it rolls to a stop. You make touchdown. And then it's over. Like that moment, you're like, ooh, we're here again. Terra firma, we're here.
Mm-hmm.
How is that?
Well, there's a part of you that is, you know, Earth to me still is really, really beautiful. So, like, being out in the Florida air once we were out of the vehicle was just like, this is amazing. And I was so excited. My daughter was 3, so I really wanted to see her because I had actually not seen her for a little over 3 weeks, which at that point was maybe the longest I had been without seeing her and holding her. And so I was so excited to see her and my husband. And again, my parents were there, my sister. So that was really special.
Your mom and dad, like, they just saw the impossible. You know, that's...
Yeah, and again, like I said, my mom was way more concerned. Like, I think, again, my dad is like, oh, my gosh, this is all the stuff I read about and I watched on television. And I think my mom was like, oh my gosh, I'm just glad she's home.
right. And now your daughter's older. What age did she kind of go, I really do get it now? Because at 3, you know, but you don't know. But at what point did she really grasp what her mom had done?
Kind of middle school. I mean, in elementary school, when we moved back to the Washington State area, I went in and talked a couple times to the classes that she was in, and she started realizing like, oh, not everyone's parents in the Northwest work at NASA. It's not just down the road like it was when we lived in Houston. So she started realizing it's a bigger deal. But in middle school, I showed her the videos I made on orbit for her. And that's when she was like, this is really cool, Mom. You know, like, that's amazing. So that's like when I think it really hit her what I had done.
What did you, last question, what did you bring up? Do you have one thing that you, that was your memento, your piece of it? Were you allowed to take anything at all that you, is in your house? You go, oh, this is my thing.
Yes. We get to take several things. And we get kind of like a little small drawer. But there was one really special thing that I took with me, which was I have a ring that I bought when I was like 13, 14 years old. Again, I was at a camp. This wasn't at space camp, but I was at a camp at college. It was kind of, we call it kind of like brain camp, gifted camp, I guess. And I had, it's a crescent moon and a star. And I had it, like I've worn it. I still wear it, but I wore it in space. And it's just that reminder that even when I was a teenager and that I still was like holding true to my dream of becoming an astronaut.
I love it. What a great story. Honestly, Dottie, I could do this all day. You guys, everybody listening, you have your chance. March 21st, 22nd, 23rd. Are you going to be there all 3 days at Comic-Con?
Yes. Yes. And I'm looking forward to people coming by, and I'm looking forward to meeting stars too. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and how cool is it? Because this had to have happened to you already, that stars that you love, we love, that they realize you're an astronaut. Now suddenly they're fans of yours, and you're like, hold on, I want to ask you questions.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes. This is only a couple times have I had these types of opportunities, and it is really fun to share both directions.
Wait till you see Kansas City. This thing is a monster. It is it will sell out all 3 days. It is a huge, huge event. You'll have a great time in Kansas City. They'll love you, Dottie.
Oh, thank you so much. This has been great. Thank you for such a great interview.
Anytime. I love it. You come back here anytime, Dottie.
Thank you.
Stay right there. Hold on.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's A-L-M-A-S-E-D.com.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.